At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Good morning and welcome to episode 70 of the Jaguar Report podcast. My name is Gus Logue, joined as always by my co-host John Shipley. Going to break down Jaguars versus Titans today. But first, how are you, John?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Gus? 70 episodes. I know I say this literally every week, but who would have thought?
Twice a week now.
Yeah. Hey. Who would have thought? Double the who would have thoughts and double the good mornings. Have you noticed the YouTube commenter who keeps saying it yet?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was a tweet about it too. No, I love it.
Yeah, it's a good bit. It's a good bit. But now I'm doing good, man. It feels like this week has gone by fast. Like, it feels crazy that the Jags play again in like 2 days. Like, I feel like I just watched them get taken out back and destroyed like 2 days ago.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be like the longest week of the season just because of how ugly that loss was on Sunday. I thought it was just going to be like a week full of like bad online takes that we'd have to get through. And I mean, there were some takes that were out there this week for sure, but I don't know.
it's still been a week of bad takes.
Wasn't as bad as I was really expecting, but honestly, like, we always talk about like how we get to like a certain part of the year and we're just kind of like getting through it, and kind of hit me this week. I was like, fun season, but oof, week 11, we're in the double digits now. It's really a grind.
Eight more games. Potentially more. Depending on how these next 2 weeks go.
Yeah. Is it
a leap to say these are our two most important games this year?
No. I feel like we say, like, every week that, like, oh, this game is the most important game. But, like, the Texans game in 2 weeks is looking like it'll actually be maybe the most important game of the season. Yeah. Since obviously the Texans are just one game back currently, and they have an easier schedule the rest of the year than the Jags. So the Jags splitting that head-to-head record 1-1 would be pretty big time. But also, this week is a must-win, even though it's probably not as big of a game, like, still a divisional game, still trying to kind of separate yourself from the rest of the division. And I mean, the Titans are 3-6, and even though the fighting Mike Vrabels always put up a good fight, feels like they're not really the same caliber of team that they have been in years past. So this is kind of a must-win. This is more of like a can't-lose game than a must-win in my eyes, because, like, if they lose this game, then like, next week will actually be the longest week of our lives.
Yeah, I think the New York Times, like, playoff simulator has the Jaguars at, like, 82% chance to make the playoffs after the San Francisco loss. Like, that was a big game in the sense of a chance to, like, you know, potential NFL game of the week, you know, establish yourself, get some national respect. But in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't a game that really mattered. These next two games, though, they are wildly, you know, important. So if the Jaguars win these next 2 weeks, according to New York Times, they have a 97% chance to make the playoffs. So if you get two wins in a row, you're more or less in. If they win this week, it's 87%. A win this week and a loss next week, you're down to 73%. And then if you lose both weeks, whoo, buddy, it gets interesting. Down to 47% if they go. Oh, so basically like a 40% swing if they go 0-2 over these next 2 weeks. If you go 2-0, more or less, if you win these next 2 weeks, you're punching a ticket to the playoffs one way or another, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with games later in the year, you're playing either Dorian Thompson Robinson or PJ Walker in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. You're playing Bryce Young. You're playing Tampa Bay. You know, you're maybe now playing Jake Browning on primetime.
Right.
These are huge, huge games. So it obviously starts with this week versus the Titans, but this is pretty easily like their most important stretch.
I'm honestly surprised that it made a lot more sense when you said like the drop off was pretty big, but losing both of these two games in the next 2 weeks and still having a 47% shot is like better than I would have expected. And then we're going 1-1 and having like an 87% chance or whatever you said. I mean, I guess they did set themselves up pretty well for the second half of the year, especially compared to last season when they were on the opposite side of things.
So here's what it would look like if the Titans win this week and the Texans win this week.
Okay.
Jags would be right at the 69-70% mark, and then that'd bring Jaguars Texans, you know, tied going into week 12. If the Jaguars were to win that game, they go up to 86%. If they lose that game, yeah, they drop below 50. So it definitely these two games are massive, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think like the biggest thing is looking, you know, like you said, the Titans aren't the team that they've been in years past. I feel like, you know, Mike Vrabel normally has them punching above their weight, but they look like they play like a 3-6 team right now. You know, like they're banged up. The roster's obviously deteriorated some. It seems like they're in it for the long haul right now, more so than competing for a title this year. It kind of seems like they're just kind of turning their wheels until the season's over. But after, you know, we kind of went through the offensive issues against San Francisco, I mean, how confident are you in a bounce back game from the offense this week?
Not that confident. Like,
yeah,
six. This is one of those games where I feel like, in my eyes, like we can like project the defense to allow like a specific amount of points, and then like the outcome of the game is just gonna come down to how the offense performs. I think they're definitely gonna be like determined and motivated to put up a good performance, and especially since like they played so poorly at home, and there's not really any reason for that. It's funny when Doug and Trevor get asked about it, because they're really like I don't have an answer for you. I don't know. It's the darndest thing, is what Doug Peterson said.
Not an answer they can say out loud.
I'm sure they'll be motivated to kind of like get back on the right track, and especially like in front of their home crowd. But like as they've said, like they've been emphasizing like no turnovers for weeks now, and like they keep happening. So like,
yeah.
I don't really know. And then like Doug Peterson's like, yeah, like our process isn't going to change, which is like fair. Like you shouldn't just like upend everything because you have like bad turnover luck. But yeah, I don't know. You kind of have to wait to see it to believe it. For like when they're going to stop shooting themselves in the foot. So I'm inclined that they'll like figure some stuff out on offense week because they've got the motivation, and because this Titans defense is, I don't know where it ranks in terms of like EPA and efficiency wise, but I assume it's below average. And this is a secondary that you can probably pick on. So hypothetically, Jaguars should be able to get back on track, and they should be able to score easily 20 plus points and maybe even 30 plus, but we'll see if that actually happens.
Like I do feel like, if there's any game like on the schedule like that you would want to be like the bounce back game, like this is definitely, you know, one of them. Mm-hmm. Like, can you imagine if they were playing Houston this week instead of next week, like coming off the 49ers loss? Like, yeah, people would be wound.
Yeah.
So, you know, right now, you know, for the season, the Titans defense is 29th in EPA per play. They're better in success rate. They're 21st. It's been mostly their pass defense, so 28th in, you know, EPA allowed, 30th in success rate. They've been a little better the last couple weeks. I looked at it yesterday since Levis became starter. They're like 20th and 21st in each, and they're, I think, like a top 12 in both run metrics. So the defense has probably been better in recent weeks than it was earlier in the year. But I don't know. The way I describe like the Titans defense is they have a really, really good defensive line, but it's not a good defense. You know, like they can definitely get after you. I don't expect the Jaguars to have much success running the ball again this week. Like, yeah. I don't know what week I can project them. Like, it was just so obvious last week, like from like the first carry. It was just like, okay, yeah, this isn't gonna happen. Then, you know, you go into this week and it's, you know, really good run defenders like Jeffrey Simmons, the Nico Autry, you know. I don't expect a lot there, but I think when you look at the Titans, like the biggest thing is, you know, trying to overcome their defensive line. And, you know, right now with the Jaguars offensive line, that's probably easier said than done. Though I will say this week's balky ball. You ready?
Yeah. I was wondering if you're going to have one this week. Yeah, let's do it.
Oh, no, of course I'm going to have one this week. Of course I'm going to have one this week. Okay.
I don't know if last Sunday's events were going to.
Would you rather have a player with 2.5 sacks on 63% of the snaps or a player with 2 sacks on 28% of the snaps?
The second one, obviously.
No other context needed. No other context needed. Which one?
The second one. Is that – what is that? Yasir Abdullah versus Kalyvon Chaisson?
No, Chaisson versus Arden Key. Yeah, it's a balky. Oh. Yeah, you got balky ball. You're with him. Oh. You're with him. You're with the masterclass. You know, our Arden Key, the vaunted, you know, missing piece of the defense with 2.5 sacks through 9 games.
Yes, impression.
Maybe they were right, man. Jason's right there with his production. Maybe they were right.
Maybe they were right.
Maybe he was right. You got balky bald. The Titans got balky bald. You know,
I don't even have that much of like a fight against that argument because like I know we've talked for the entire year about like how like they need to like add to their pass rush, but like the defense is playing well, and like I don't think like pass rush is really going to be like talked again in a major way until they lose in the playoffs and everyone's like, all right, biggest offseason need for the Jaguars is pass rush because they couldn't get after whatever elite AFC quarterback they're gonna end up losing to. So like for now, like pass rush is like okay for the rest of the season, like during the regular season with the Jags actually need to figure out is their offense.
Man, I hate that. I want you to fight me more on that. Okay, here's another one. Would you rather have a player with one touchdown catch? No. Yeah, I got another one. Would you rather have a player with one touchdown catch in 16 career games or a player with one touchdown catch in 9 career games?
Would I rather have Brenton Strange or I don't know who this other guy is, but
Treylon Burks.
Ooh.
Yeah, I agree that Brenton Strange is better than Treylon Burks as a No? You're not gonna take that bait? You're not gonna take that bait?
I don't think so. I feel like Treylon Burks is like always injured though, so I feel like this could be like an actual take where you'd rather have Brenton Strange.
I'd rather have a lot of players in Strange. That's one of my draft takes I've actually been right about in the last couple of years was that Treylon Burks was just a nothing prospect. So I'm a take the victory lap on that one.
I think he was a something prospect. I didn't love him, but I liked him. I think
you loved him. You loved him.
I would admit it if I loved him. I love. Have you watched like 2024 receivers at all? Do you know the Leggett guy from South Carolina?
Who the hell is that?
Ah, never mind. He's a freak. Yeah. He reminds me of Treylon Burks because he's like massive and very fast, and it's fun to watch. So,
he reminds me
my guy for this year.
If he reminds you of Treylon Burks, I'll put him on my day 3/undrafted sleeper watch list.
All right, sounds good. We'll have to do another revisit this with the Bonky Ball segment in about a year.
No, the only receivers I know are Keon Coleman and Marvin Harrison Jr. So
yeah, who are both laughably out of reach. So
I'll get in the draft mode in March when everybody projects the Jaguars to take a receiver, and I'm probably going to make it a point not to watch a single one because I there's no way. There's no way Trent Baalke takes a receiver.
So, like maybe in the second round I could see it, but yeah, I would be shocked if the Jags drafted one in the first round.
So, like, speaking of Arden, you know, the architect of Duval, who, you know, has yet to overlap Caleb on Chase on that much. That's a bit, of course. Arden Key's been very disruptive this year on a pressure basis. He had some, you know, interesting comments this week about the Jaguars offense. He more or less said what Nick Bosa said last week, you know, that if you can force Trevor Lawrence off his first read, he'll hesitate and the offense will kind of struggle. What's your take on that? Because my take is I think he's correct, but I don't think it's for a reason people think it is. I think we've seen Lawrence throughout his career be able to go through his progressions. You know, I mean, there's literally countless examples. Like, being able to, go through his reads and see the field isn't something, like, you can criticize Lawrence for a lot of things. His down-to-down accuracy, sure. His red zone passing, absolutely. His ball security in the pocket, 100%. I don't think going through his reads and seeing the field is one of them that you have much merit for. But I do think this offense struggles when you force Lawrence off his first read, because when you're forcing him off his first read and taking away his, you know, immediate option when he gets a snap, you're forcing their offensive line to hold up in pass protection longer. And like we saw last week against San Francisco, if you force, you know, Lawrence to hold onto the ball, they just don't have the horses up front to, you know, keep him upright. And it's very clear that the quick passing game that we've seen this year isn't, like, to me, if you go with like a super quick passing game, it's either hide the quarterback or hide the offensive line. And we know it's not hiding the quarterback. So it's obviously to hide the offensive line. And I think the results have kind of said that lately.
I'm totally with you. I think Arden Key and was it Nick Bosa's comments are both not necessarily inaccurate, but it's more of a reflection on the offensive line than the quarterback. Because Lawrence is rushing through some reads, but that's because he's clearly affected by the pressure and affected by the fact that he hasn't had time to get to his third read since last year's playoff game against the Chargers, pretty much. That's what it felt like, or that's what it feels like. Cause even when he does get to his third read now, then it's Tim Jones running a route. So it's he's not even getting rewarded for getting all the way through his progressions. And then especially with the bad knee, that's been something that I kind of rediscovered this week, I guess, where I kind of just forgot about it, especially after the Steelers win, where he took off against the Saints and obviously it was not a small deal against the Saints. But then once he continued to look decent and got a win against the Steelers, I think everyone, including myself, or at least a lot of people, including myself, were kind of all right, well, not really too concerned about the knee anymore. But I think it has had an impact on both the game planning and the calls that they're calling. And then also just Lawrence's mobility and actual ability during these plays when he's getting pressured. So there's kind of a lot of different factors. The play calling being limited from his injury, and then his injury itself, and then the offensive line, and then not having Zay Jones / a third dependable receiver to go along with Christian Kirk and Calvin Ridley. So it's definitely a lot of things. And as you said, Lawrence certainly does have faults, but he's an elite quarterback. He can get through reads. Yeah.
So per SIS, and Peterson said this week that basically I think we've all seen it. One of Lawrence's best traits is throwing on the run. And Peterson said this week that they've kind of had to take that out of their game plan some, you know, strictly because of that. And, you know, when you look at the numbers, he's right. You know, since his injury, you know, week 7, week 8, and week 10, they have just 2 design rollout plays. It's, 30th, 2%, 30th in terms of usage rank. They're 5th in terms of usage rank and short dropbacks. 1st and screens, they are, they've only ran, 23 play action plays in general. And when you, look at their offense in total this year, design rollout, they're 9th, in overall this year in terms of usage rank. And they've suddenly have gone to, dead last, they're, one of the top teams, you know, at least not top teams, but I'd say like a top 10, 11 team in terms of play action, you know, rate normally with Lawrence, and that's gone way down. So I think you can see in the numbers that their passing game has become much more, you know, kind of, you know, catch the ball, you know, throw it immediately instead of getting him on the move. So I do think as he gets healthier, maybe that's one thing that, you know, you will see get better. I will say him and this offense in general seem to do better against zone defenses than they do against these teams who are going to play man and challenge them at the line. Like, I feel like especially last week, their receivers got gloved up at the line. And that was, you know, the biggest part of taking away, you know, the first read is that, you know, throwing off their time in the line of scrimmage. Calvin Ridley struggled against that this year. That's never been Christian Kirk's game. Obviously, you know, Tim Jones, he's not going to excel at it. Evan Engram, you know, for as good as he is, I don't think he's somebody who is great against, you know, physicality at the line of scrimmage. So they don't really have the offense to fight against that. But this Titans team, you know, it's mostly a zone defense. They don't run a lot of man. They don't blitz a lot. It's all like cover three, honestly, because they play a lot of one high, but they also play a ton of zone. Mm-hmm. I feel like, and we saw last week, you know, I mean, last year, Lawrence had a really big game against them. And then even in their week 18 win, when Lawrence obviously didn't have a great game, he missed a couple like gimme plays, including like a touchdown or two, where he should have had a big game. So I feel like this is the kind of defense the Jaguars offensive scheme has had success against in the past. And maybe that can give them some confidence, you know, moving into this game.
Yeah, I think you're right. Evan Engram last year, I know he had
a plays again.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it because I know he had that one really good game when it was at Tennessee. And then he was just really good in the final stretch anyway. So he only had 4 catches on 4 targets for 27 yards in the week 17 game. But in the week 13 game, he had 11 catches on 15 targets for 162 yards and 2 touchdowns.
So, best game of his career.
Yeah, that makes you think like, oh, maybe this will be an Engram week, but nope. Calvin Ridley week, baby.
is it ever not a Calvin Ridley week?
No, but like, my biggest qualm with the Jaguars offense last week is like obviously the turnovers are frustrating, but like, I don't know, like how you just like turn those off. And then like, obviously the play calling was influenced a little bit by Lawrence's injury. And then the fact that they're just like in a negative game script the whole time. But Calvin Ridley finishing with 3 targets is like just inexcusable in my eyes. And he might have finished with like 4 or 5 technically because I knew he drew a couple penalties.
You know, so, I was going to say that.
Yeah. So, like, congratulations for that. So, but like, you need to like get him more involved. So, like, find a way to do something. Like, it's unreal. I like the offensive line kind of like takes away his biggest talent, which is like running like advanced like intermediate to deep routes, and like those like take some time. And so like the things that he's really good at, like the Jags, I feel like haven't even been able to fully access because like the offensive line can't consistently give Lawrence like a first, second, and third hitch in the pocket. But even still, like you gotta find like more ways to use him creatively. Even if he's shown that he's like not the same caliber as like an AJ Brown or Tyreek Hill, like you can still use him in similar ways as those guys. And like they used a little bit of what's called cheap motion with Ridley back in week 8 against the Steelers, but like it was 2 plays that I didn't see against the Niners. And like I almost feel like they've like reserved a lot of their like cool gadget scheme open plays for Kirk. And so it's then like, I mean, I was arguing with you in the beginning of the season that like Ridley like destroys press, and that used to be true, but that hasn't been true this season. So like, I think the Jaguars definitely need to figure out a way to get Ridley involved in this game. Cause like, I don't think maybe their offensive line will continue to get better as the season goes on, like as they gel together or whatever, but like, that's probably just wishful thinking. I think like the best way for them, or the most feasible way for them to get better is just to feed Ridley a little bit more.
Yeah, no, that's what their message keeps being about the offensive line is maybe as they get more continuity, they'll improve. I feel like that's major cope personally. Yeah.
Even if that happens, like they're going to go from like the 31st best offensive line to like the 26. Right.
Exactly. And like, I feel like the Ridley thing, I'm with you. He definitely has been used like very like statically. Like,
yeah.
I feel like their definition of we're trying to scheme things up for him is like that first sack on the first drive against the 49ers last week. You talked about on Monday's show, but you know, they put Ridley in the slot and they tried to have him run like a deep over, and the 49ers just like read it instant. Like, yeah, moving him into the slot is a start, but you can just do so much more. You know, like the low motion rate, low stack rate, low bunch rate. Like, I'm sorry, I just refuse to believe that Zay Jones, like, I know it's having an impact. I completely understand it. I agree with it, but I refuse to believe that Zay Jones, of all receivers in the NFL, is going to be the player that turns this passing offense from underperforming to suddenly, you know, what everybody expected it to be. No, like, that's just – I don't believe that's a thing. I think he would help Ridley a lot, but I think they can help Ridley more than they've done so. So I'm with you on that. I'm interested to see if that changes this week at all because – oh, no, you know, Press got asked yesterday about him drawing penalties, and he was like, yeah, it sucks that it doesn't get on the stat sheet. It almost seems like they're, you know, kind of accepting that as, okay, that's a big part, you know, of the offense. And I don't think you can live and die with that.
No, definitely not. It's worked out so far. Like, it hasn't been terrible that, like, Ridley's production on deep passes has almost come more from yards drawn from penalty than, like, actual just catches and receiving yards. But, like, that doesn't feel like a formula that you should, like, keep going back to and that can, like, hold up for the entire season. Because, like,
yeah,
then you're just going to, like, keep – if you just, like, keep Ridley in the static role and keep throwing him the same kinds of passes, then, like – and then you don't get a defensive pass interference call, then, like, what happens? Because it's not like Ridley is getting a ton of – or really any, like, and ones where he makes the catch and gets the call. It's like he just kind of, like, almost gets bailed out by the call a decent amount of times. So,
yeah.
If he, like, stops getting bailed out by the refs, then, like, now what? That's kind of what happened against the Chiefs. Like, I feel like there is – he might have gotten a call or two, but there's definitely two calls off the top of my head that I can remember where you, like, got held and the refs didn't call it. But it's like, if you're the Jaguars, like, you can't just, like, live with that and be like, oh, well, we tried and, like, the refs just, like, missed the call, but we got our guy in the right spot in the situation we wanted. It's like, no, like, it didn't work. So you got to figure something else out.
Yeah. And I'm with you, you know, completely. And it all feels like kind of tied together, like their offensive issues, like to the offensive line, but
yeah,
they've made their bed there. They bulky ball the offensive line, surely. You know, it's not like they're throwing out nobody's out there. You know, they've invested a lot into it. So until that improves, I'm not sure you're seeing the offense go anywhere. Like I said, I feel like there are mismatches, their skill players versus Tennessee, but it starts and ends with the offensive line. And it's another week where they're going against a really good defensive line. So I'm a bit skeptical myself that you see a big offensive game this weekend.
Yeah. I was going to ask for a score prediction, but I guess we'll get to that later.
We'll get there. But yeah, we're going to go ahead and go to a quick break, and then we'll get to the defense. Gus, Mike Caldwell gave his quote of the year yesterday. He literally called the Jaguars defense fraudulent for their performance against the 49ers. He called those men imposters.
Imposters. Like, that was great.
That was a bar, dude. And He wasn't wrong. Like, when you go back and watch tape, I really feel like how bad the offense was has skewed a lot of people with the defensive performance. Because, yeah, they fought in the first half, you know. Like, they limited San Francisco 13 points in the first half, but it wasn't a good defensive performance. It wasn't. It was one of the two worst this year. It's that week and against Houston. And, you know, it just no matter any way you look at it, you know, the defense was bad last week. Much different scenario this week, though. You're playing an offense that doesn't have the pieces that San Francisco has. It doesn't have the play caller. It doesn't even have, in my opinion, the quarterback. And I'm not a Brock Purdy guy.
Like, yeah.
My entire, like, stance on Will Levis is that he's probably going to be fine, like, top 20-ish quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, like, if Baker Mayfield can start weekly, I think Will Levis can. But,
right,
like, the people rushing to anoint him so far is – Like he 4 touchdowns against the Falcons. Obviously, you know, wow, wild start. Since then, he's really, you know, cooled off. He has one like the lowest like pure drop back rates in the NFL this year. So that's a lot of screens, a lot of RPOs, a lot of play action.
Yeah,
I don't think all of his struggles are on him because their offensive line's obviously really bad. I think Andre Dillard just got benched like again at left tackle. They've had a lot of injury issues, but he's not setting the NFL on fire, you know. And I firmly believe that his performance against the Falcons was more so the Falcons are just one of the most cursed franchises in sports. Like they had that happen against Levis. They had Josh Dobbs dice them up after being a Viking for like 2 seconds. They had Kyler Murray have a 3rd and 10 little backyard scramble against them his first game back. Like it's just what the Falcons do. And since he's played the Falcons, he's really come back down to earth. Is he somebody that should concern them that much? Because like to me, the big thing is he's gonna chuck it deep, especially DeAndre Hopkins. And I feel like the Jaguars defense has been hit or miss, you know, deep this year. But otherwise, I don't think he should concern them that much.
I don't think so either. Cause like the only reason like those, like his arm, like would concern me is just like from recency bias of the Jaguars' last game, like the Ayuk touchdown and the George Kittle touchdown are like 2 plays that come to mind where like Purdy was like under pressure and it probably should have been a sack first, let alone like an incompletion. But then like he just like happens to drop 2 dimes really and like just get it to his playmakers, and then the playmakers finish the plays for him. But like Will Levis doesn't have like the same weapons that Purdy had, or the same offensive line that Purdy had, or the same play caller that Purdy had. So like even though he does have like a stronger arm than Purdy, and Purdy also like put the ball into some like crazy windows on Sunday. So like I definitely think like it's a step down for the quarterback, and like hypothetically, as Levis showed against Atlanta, like he can hurt you with those bombs, but I think the Jags would be like much better equipped to handle those deep bombs, like with like so much less eye candy going around with the Titans offense compared to the Niners offense. I mean, Tyson Campbell will definitely be a big injury to watch this week. I don't know. Was he limited in practice this week?
He hasn't practiced this week.
Oh, he hasn't practiced. So, Gregory Jr., a.k.a. G-Money, is probably going
to – G-Money. I thought I meant Gene.
That would have been good. Someone clarify. I can't believe no one, like, that was a missed opportunity. Yeah, Gregory Jr. is probably going to start if Tyson Campbell can't go. So, like, Tyson Campbell, like, I feel like the kind of receiver he matches up well against is someone like Nuke, who's Nuke would probably get him a couple times in, like, contested catches situations, because Nuke has always been good at, like, the low-key shove-off, and Tyson hasn't quite gotten all the way there in terms of tracking and finishing on the ball. But, like, Tyson does usually do well against, like, bigger receivers on the sidelines and, like, shiftier receivers out of the slot. So we'll see what kind of impact that has this week for the Jags cornerback injury.
Yeah, so going back, like, since week 8, Will Levis' first start, he ranks first in air yards per target among, you know, 30 qualifying quarterbacks. I did, like, minimum 50 plays. In terms of adjusted EPA per play, he is number 23rd, one spot ahead of Patrick Mahomes. And then in terms of success rate, he's 28th out of 30th, only in front of Bryce Young and Tommy DeVito. So he's airing it out, but pretty mixed results. It's been mostly, again, that Falcons game. And I'm with you. Like, the big things are going to be the contested catches, the jump balls, the chunk plays. If they can limit the explosives, I think that they can get after him as a pass rush unit, because their pass rush was better last week than I thought it would be. I feel like Trayvon, I'm not ready to call him an average pass rusher yet, because he's like the numbers still aren't great for him, like on an efficiency basis. But in terms of volume pressures, he's starting to at least improve there, which is a step forward in some sense. Yeah. And I feel like like these are the kind of like tackles. Like his big thing is like get in a wide nine, get at a, you know, get at an angle, and then basically bull rush down the center of the guy's chest. I feel like this is an offensive tackle combo that would actually be, you know, it would actually probably not be a bad strategy for him.
Did he have a – I feel like Trayvon had a kind of nice game against the Titans last year.
He got hurt in that game, but he had one of his 3.5 sacks, and he had a a strip sack on Tannehill that came at, like, out of a 3-point stance, and everybody was like, that's what happened. So So, and then I mean, in that Week 18 game, like he didn't have a good game as a pass rusher, but he was, you know, good against the run. So looking back since Week 10. Looking like at win rate, you know, all pass rushers with the edge rushers with at least 50 pass rushes, there are 86 of them. Josh Allen's number one in win rate, you know, since Week 6, and Trayvon is 62. So the pressures are up, but the efficiency still isn't there. I think, you know, this week they probably would take, you know, the pressures, like he's 31st. In pressures since Week 6, that he's getting better. I'm not gonna take the leap to say that he's good, but he's getting better as a pass rusher. So I think that combined, like I think it'll be a big Josh Allen week. I think that they have, you know, the scheme in place, the tools in place to take away the passing game. What about the running game? Because the Jaguars like run defense, the numbers haven't been as kind to them. In the last few weeks, like they haven't ranked high in, you know, stuff, you know, since Week 8. I believe they are, let me see, they're 16th in rushing EPA allowed and 12th in success rate, which obviously isn't bad, but they started the year like in the top three in both. So they've
are you on RBS DM? Do you? Just do weeks 1 through 9 for my curiosity. Because, like, I thought they were, like, a pretty good run defense going into the Steelers game, and then they didn't allow much against the Steelers. So I wonder, like, how big of a deal the Niners game was. Especially because McCaffrey, like, Debo had a couple big carries.
They are 12th in EPA and first in success rate. The game that actually did them in was the Saints game, because going into Week 6, they were number 2 in EPA, number 3 in success rate, and then in Week 7 again.
I don't remember them being, like, bad on the ground that game.
I think Alvin Kamara had, like, a couple, like, explosive runs. Taysom Hill, yeah. Let's see. In week seven, they were the worst team by rushing EPA and 14th in success rate. So the Saints game and the 49ers game have been bogging them down. I feel like they have, like, the personnel to stop, like, Henry more so than they have the personnel to stop a Kamara and stop a McCaffrey. But they got to get back to base. The three safety looks, I go ahead and put that one in the recycling bin. I don't. And Doug basically said this week, he was like, yeah, we had several miscommunications and three safety looks. I get back to base. I'm still don't understand completely their reasoning for using so many three safety looks last week, but against another team this week that's going to, like, pretty much, you know, load up at the line of scrimmage, I think just get back to what you do best, you know, get as many big guys as you can on the field. Try to take away Henry.
The Titans this year rank first in stacked box run rate and last in light box run rate. That's so right. They're expecting heavy boxes, and they get it, and they still run through it. And then last year, Derrick Henry's two games against Mike Caldwell's defense. In Week 14, he had 17 carries for 121 yards, so 7.1 per carry and a touchdown. Mm-hmm. And then in Week 18, he had 30 carries, 109 yards and 0 touchdowns, but it's 3.6 yards per attempt. So he went over 100 yards in both games. And then he was, like, really good efficiency wise in, like, the bigger loss earlier in the season. But yeah. I don't know. Like, and then like the three games even before that, he had 130 yards, 215 yards, and 84 yards. So like Derrick Henry over whatever, however amount of carries is probably a good bet this week. And then like we'll see how well the Jags do holding him up. Cause like really, I think like if you like contain Henry, then like that makes everything so much easier for you, like to get like Levis into like continuous third and seven situations. Like he's not going to make a lot of those plays on his own.
Yeah. So
like definitely Derrick Henry is a key focus, obviously.
Yeah. So this is a matchup we like, you know, for the Jaguars, you'd say.
Yeah, bar the three safety looks, yeah, I think they'll be able to, like, I think, like, Henry will still get his, but I think they'll, like, not contain him in the sense that he's going to get held to 18 carries for 40 yards, but contain the sense that, like, you'll have 18 carries for 80 yards, but none of them were, like, really backbreakers, and you only had, like, four first down runs.
Over under on how many runs they have designed to go right at Darius Williams. I'll give you 10.
I mean under, but I was gonna say over three.
Yeah,
with Debo. Debo is just charging right at Darius.
Yeah, week 18 last year, the Titans had like a handful of plays where like it was designed like to get Henry on the edge and leave Williams unblocked and have Williams try to tackle him one on one. Great cover guy. He ain't gonna do that. So I'd expect to see that this week. I feel like this is a week where if the Jaguars can't get sacks and can't get turnovers back on track, then you can be concerned about the sustainability of the defense. You know, like I feel like this is a week that you have to get turnovers in some sense, because if you don't, then what, like, to me, that you're just showing that the turnovers, like, you never know when they're going to happen and that you can't rely on them week to week, which is probably true, like, in general. Right. But this defense, like, clearly, you know, this team clearly, you know, needs the turnovers, you know, to function. And if you can't get them this week against, like, you know, this quarterback, then I don't know. Like, Levis has the third – like, since he started, he has the third highest turnover-worthy play rate. Right behind Brock Purdy, who they got zero turnovers against. So
yeah, I think Tyson Campbell's absence might have had like a low key big deal, like for Jacksonville's run splits, because he was out against the Saints and then he left the Niners game in like the second or the third quarter after re-aggravating the hamstring injury, and like he's easily their best tackling defensive back, let alone cornerback. And so like he's like a huge deal like to have on the edge. And so again, like the Niners were like kind of like going after Darius Williams a little bit last week, and Gregory Jr., proud recipient of my game ball, like didn't allow anything. Mike Caldwell was talking him up a little bit yesterday.
Did you see that one comment who was like, we should, like, the Colts should give Alec Pierce a game ball for running a million routes every game and not doing anything?
Me. Yeah. But yeah, so I think like the Tyson injury is pretty big in terms of like Jacksonville's run defense. But then on flip side of that, like I think like I am with you that like the Zay thing has been overblown at this point, and it's like you can't use the Zay thing as an excuse, especially since like you should have had like some kind of backup plan. But I do think he's like their best, especially after Marvin Jones left too. Like I think Zay is like easily their best run blocker on the perimeter, maybe besides Tim Jones, but like you don't really want Tim Jones playing a ton of reps or a ton of snaps. So like can you remember like a lot of, or like I feel like we were talking about this earlier this season, but it feels like the Jaguars ran a lot more outside run plays last year compared to this year. And so, like, I think objective
more like, part of that more is like toss plays and stuff for sure.
Yeah. But like, still, like, toss crack was like their like third most commonly run play. Whereas, like, most teams will like have toss crack as like to kind of like get away from one of their main things. But like, the Jags made toss crack one of their main things. And so, I'm sure there's plenty of reasons that they've not had it be one of their main things this year. But I do think Zay Jones could be a real reason why.
Yeah, I'm with you. Gus, you got anything else for us on defensive part?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, well, we're going to cut for a break, and we'll be right back with our predictions. All right, Gus, give me your locks of the week. Make me some money, because I'm pretty sure I haven't been keeping track. Maybe I should, but I'm pretty sure anybody who listens to me is probably living in the gutter at this point. I don't know if I've had anything right. I'll go ahead and give you mine.
Okay.
Derrick Henry rush yards, 56.5. I'll go over.
Yeah.
Will Levis passing yards, 212.5. I'll go under. I don't see it. I don't see him having a big day. Travis Etienne receiving yards, 22.5. I'll go over. I think they try to get the screen game going some more this week. You know, you saw how successful it was last week. Maybe they're like, okay, maybe that needs to be a staple, you know, right, of what we're doing. And then Calvin Ridley,
close too.
Yeah. Calvin Ridley, 48.5 receiving yards. Pound the under. Lock it in. Lock of the week. Go to QA. Lock of the week. Pound the under. Bet the mortgage.
Oh, man.
Yeah, let's hear it.
I think my lock of the week is Derrick Henry rushing yards. I like that one a lot. Like, I feel like game script doesn't even really matter because, like, no one's going to be expecting the Jags to put up, like, 40, and I feel like that's pretty much the only way that Derrick Henry doesn't get to that number. Brandon McManus, over 1.5 field goals made.
Hey, the leg.
I like the ETN receiving one for all the reasons that you said. I always like taking ETN over rushing plus receiving yards too, just to completely like negate any game script
basis. Yeah.
I don't see it. I'm my lock of the week.
Josh Allen over half a sack too. It's not on Prize Picks, but if you can find a Josh Allen prop bet out there, I feel like this is a big Josh Allen sack week. I think he gets two. Passes you Nick Ngakoue for second all time, which is extremely embarrassing of a stat, but nonetheless.
I can't. Prize Picks doesn't have Trevor Lawrence's touchdowns, but I would go over 1.5 touchdowns for Trevor Lawrence, which feels like he's thrown multiple touchdowns like maybe twice this year.
They don't have it because he's averaging a touchdown a game.
Let's see real quick. I feel like there was a Colts game where he threw two, and maybe that's it.
I think that might be it.
Passing touchdowns. Oh, no, I was right. He had two against Indy in both games. And other than that, he has.
What was the other one he had? Oh, he had one to Zay Jones in week one, didn't he? Okay. Yeah. He had one to Zay Jones and one to Calvin Ridley. So yeah, they should just play the Colts every week.
Yeah. And then he had zero against the Niners, zero against the Chiefs, and one touchdown thrown in every other game. So this is. I don't even know, like, if 1.5 is, like, the thing. Is it just, like, over under, like, one touchdown? Is it over under 0.5 touchdowns?
I'd say it'd be 0.5. It'd probably be 0.5. And honestly, I'll say it. I'm not sure I would take it.
Yeah, I was like, why is this the lock of the week? I was feeling good about it. So I just recounted the stats.
Honestly, the best bit this week would be for them to have, like, three or four rushing touchdowns. And like purposely, like get to the 1 yard line and just run it instead of passing it. Like purposely keep those touchdown. Like get into some Arthur Smith, you know, semantics about it. That'd be the best bit possible.
That's true. I'm trying to look on DraftKings for Trevor Lawrence over 1.5 touchdowns is only plus 105 odds. I'm sticking with it. Lock of the week, multiple touchdowns. I think it's going to be
the week.
I think it's going to be a bounce back game. To get for my score prediction, I'm going to say 26-16 Jaguars.
I just want to point out how ridiculous it is that the bold take lock of the week has to be the number one overall pick Ferrari quarterback will throw more than one touchdown. Like, it's very indicative of how things are going.
I'm going
2016 Jags. I don't think the offense has a good game. I think they win because of the defensive turnovers, and everybody complains for another week until. And I also think CJ Stroud probably throws like 300 yards and four touchdowns and really gets those takes going. Really gets those takes flying.
Yeah, I think, like I said, 26 points for the Jags. I think, like, they're going to get, like, a decent amount of, like, good field position. And, like I said, McManus over field goals. Like, I think, like, the offense shouldn't have too tough of a job for themselves on Sunday. And then hopefully that'll help themselves to not keep screwing up.
They need it, man. They need it. You have a hot take of the week?
I think my hot take is just that the Tyson and Zay matter in the run game.
I'll give you that.
Because that wasn't super fiery, but I don't have another one off the dome. So, right. What about you?
My hot take of the week is that Mike Vrabel is the fourth best head coach in the AFC South right now. Yeah, let's turn that one up. D'Amico's doing good. Steichen's winning games with Gardner Minshew for the most part.
Yeah, that's pretty insane. I feel like
I had to sneeze.
It was insane.
That one episode you weren't here for, I had this sneeze like 4 times in a row. I'm like, I need Gus here to kill the dead air. It's just people listening to me being like, every 5 seconds, like, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I got to work on my takesmanship. I don't know.
I don't like
coming up with like things off the top of my head. I need to do better at like preparing stuff. Honestly, I'll make sure I have a good one next week.
There's not a lot of good hot takes to have. Like, this isn't like a big storyline game. Like, had the Jaguars won last week, this game would have zero storylines.
Would have zero storylines?
Yeah, if the Jaguars won last week, this game would just be another ho-hum game. Since they lost last week, the storyline is like, can they bounce back or will they keep spiraling?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, there would have been like storylines about like how it's a divisional game, but like that happens for every divisional game. So I don't disagree.
I'm allergic to your lack of takes.
It looks like it. This is crazy. That was at least 4 you just rattled off.
Yeah. I average about 4 or 5. I'm a sneezer, man.
Really? You're one of those, you just need a couple reps to get through it.
I got very cartoons like sneezes too. I'm a achoo ass. I am.
I'm a shatter when I sneeze. I don't know where it is. I'm a sneeze shatter.
There's it's a shatter in the press box on Sunday. I was ready to catch a charge, dude. Names unspoken, but super loud. Like during the Kirk fumble, one of the biggest plays of the game, trying to sort out what happened. Just loudest phone call imaginable right next to me. I'm like, dude, Jamal St. Cyr was like, yeah, Jamal St. Cyr was like, Shibley, what happened on that play? And I'm like, I don't know, dude. I don't know, bro. I'm over here in a conference call. I don't know.
I'm always sitting by like Niners or like the opposing team's radio people because I'm like with 10-10. So then like just to the right of like our little group is like, again, the opposition's like radio group. And so then they're always like super loud and just like talking about, like apparently like one of them asked Adam Stites about like his opinion on Brock Purdy, like just in the middle of the game while Adam's trying to write. So like, yeah, press box is a fun time.
Yeah, no, it is. Well, Gus, you got anything else for us?
No, I'm practicing my takesmanship as soon as we get out of here.
I don't blame you for this week. It's I don't know, this week feels like a game against the 2023 Titans. It's bleh. You know?
I thought it was funny how all the coaches were asked like, oh, is this the kind of game, the Niners game, that you like throw the film out and just move on, or do you like go back and watch it? And Doug was kind of more like, oh yeah, like we like went back and watched it. All the guys like wanted to make sure they corrected their mistakes. And then you asked Mike Kalba, and he's like, yeah, no, we just threw that thing out.
He's like,
what did he postures?
What did he say? What did he say exactly? I'm gonna find it real quick because it was he like immediately was like, yeah, no, I don't ever want to hear about this.
That was in our group. We turned that on. We were like, that must be someone else. Yeah, it was a great line.
Let's see. I'm fine. So this is one of the ones you just throw away. Yeah.
I think basically my point is that like there wasn't really a ton we could take out of the Niners game to talk about other than like what the heck, like fix this.
Yeah.
Like, and they, so I do think there'll be more takes to come out of the Titans game. I'm with you.
Yeah, I'm with you there as well, my friend. Well,
I'm with you there as well.
until Monday, I don't know, man. Monday, if they lose, the people will be melting down. Man.
Dude, if they lose, like, the season is as good as over for Jacksonville, I think, or like for like in Jacksonville's fans' eyes.
Yeah, yeah. Like I'm with you. It'd be the most distraught 6-4.
Did you see that Panthers fans organized like a silent protest or like a silent march or a peaceful protest? Yeah.
As opposed to
more than silent, I think.
As opposed to they're gonna riot?
Yeah. I guess they felt like it, but that's what I'm saying is that like Jags fans are gonna feel like rioting if they lose the teams on Sunday. And so would you be surprised if Cap organized a peaceful protest?
Panther fans are going to riot and throw Bryce Young through a storefront window. And then when he doesn't crack it, they're going to throw a brick. Did you see Nicole Tepper was watching their offensive line drills the other day?
No, that's awesome, though. I'm sad I missed that because that sounds pretty great.
Like several of the beat writers were like, yeah, a lot of focus on the offensive line at practice today. Frank Reich's watching them. Scott Fitterer's watching them. And also the owner's wife. I'm like, the hell is she doing there?
Ball. I love it.
Yeah, exactly. Tepper ball.
Oh, God, that's gross. You thought monkey ball was bad. Tepper ball. That doesn't come off the scent right way.
Yeah. There are not two owners probably more different than Shad Khan and Tepper. Like, there's hands off, like, probably, like, the like definition of a hands-off owner, like lets his guys do what they need to do, and then there's whatever the hell Carolina's doing where the owner is like wrist deep in trade talks and everything.
Let's say you need new jerseys for your peewee football team and you can only ask David Tepper or Jim Irsay for some money to get sponsored for new jerseys. Who would you rather have as your peewee team owner?
Tepper, because they already have several Bryce Young jerseys my kids could wear.
Good one. There we go.
You set me up for that one.
That was good.
You set me up for that one. I appreciate it. That was a nice little softball. Yeah.
That was good. Yeah.
Well, until Monday, we'll either be here breaking down a win or trying to talk you all off the ledge, probably unsuccessfully. John Shipley, my co-host Gus Logue. This was the Jaguar Report Podcast. And we will see y'all next week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.